Welcome to a very special edition of the Heartland Journal Tennessee podcast. Hi, my name is Steve Johann. I'm the producer of the show. I've been along on this journey, 200 episodes to be exact, with Steve from the very beginning. I remember the day when he walked into my office and we sat down and he discussed the idea of having a podcast to augment his newly bought and purchased Mill Creek View Journal. And he said, I want to do an extension and I want to start doing podcasting. So we devised the show and we launched it. Here we are 200 episodes later, celebrating his accomplishment as a host and as a great interviewer. It's been a pleasure to work with him. I look forward to another 200 episodes, God willing. So to begin with, let's start out with a review of the history of the show. I think that's in order. Come along with me. It's going to be a lot of fun. Here we go. Welcome to the Mill Creek View Podcast, bringing you views, news, and interviews with your host, Stephen Abramowitz.
Hi, Mill Creek and elsewhere. Welcome to episode number 2. I have a great show lined up for you. For more information about the Mill Creek View Podcast and Mill Creek View Newspaper, make sure to visit us at www.millcreekviewonline.com. Don't forget to subscribe to the show at podomatic.com or download the Podomatic app so you won't miss a single episode. And email me at millcreekview@yahoo.com for comments, and I may just publish it in your hometown paper since 1991. So we always start out the show with a review of the latest episode of the Mill Creek View newspaper, volume 31, issue 10. Headline, this is our special Memorial Day edition. More on that in a second. But baby formula shortage has led to crisis across America. Noel Wyman writes, the Abbott recall began in February after two babies died from bacterial infection. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki claimed, Press Secretary Jen Psaki claimed that Abbott's formula had resulted. Can't do any of it. Hang on, and we'll be right back with Senator John Lovick, who I know you want to hear from. Welcome to our People in the News segment, where we interview people who are making an impact in our city and county. This week, we are talking with State Senator John Lovick. John has spent his life in public service. Prior to his election to office, he served as a state trooper for 31 years and was named Trooper of the Year in 1992. He also served a total of 13 years in the United States Coast Guard, including time patrolling the waters off Alaska. Lovick was elected to the Mill Creek City Council in 1993, where he served as mayor pro tem. He was elected to the House of Representatives in 1998, where he served for 9 years, including 5 as speaker pro tem. In June 2016, Lovick was appointed to the House of Representatives to fill the vacated seat by Rep. Hans Dunshi and won re-election to the position in November 2016. In December 2021, Lovick was selected to fill the vacancy left when Steve Hobbs was appointed Secretary of State. John Lovick, how are you?
I'm doing great, Steve, and it's good to be with you and your listeners. Thanks for having me on.
Excellent. Thank you so much for taking the time. So, Senator Lovick, last week was our special Mill Creek View Memorial Day edition, which I'm particularly proud of, and you were kind enough to submit comments for our Salute to Veterans section. Let me read that. On this Memorial Day, I want to share my deepest gratitude for my brothers and sisters in service that gave their lives in defense of our great nation. We must always remember the freedoms we cherish and the safe communities we...
That was episode number 2 of the Mill Creek View podcast. Former Sheriff Lovick, who quite frankly is quite liberal, and Steve did all he could to just stay within the boundaries and not have him hang up. And I think he did a great job. The following is the last episode of the Mill Creek View Washington episodes before he moved to Tennessee.
That was a good one. All right. Welcome to our Thought of the Week. But before I share, I want to remind everyone to subscribe to Mill Creek View Podcast and to the Mill Creek View Newspaper. Just go to Podomatic, Spotify, or iHeartRadio, or Amazon Music. Let us give thanks to God for Queen Elizabeth's long life and reign, recalling with gratitude her gifts of wisdom, diligence, and service. God, from whom cometh everything that is upright and true, accept our thanks for the gifts of heart and mind that thou didst bestow upon thy daughter Elizabeth, and which she shows forth among us in her words and deeds, and grant that we may have grace to live our lives in accordance with thy will, to seek the good of others, and to remain faithful servants unto our lives end through Jesus Christ our Lord, said the Reverend Dr. Ian Greenshields, moderator of the General Assembly of the Church of Scotland, during the prayers, Church of Scotland, a Presbyterian church that the monarch is bound by oath to defend. Nothing about colonizer or racism. We'd all be so lucky to have half said of us. Well, that's it for this episode and pretty much the end of season one, focused on Washington people, issues, and politics. I want to thank our likely final Washington guest, Scott Stevenson. Sorry, Sheriff Fortney, Tiffany Smiley, and County Executive Summers. God knows I tried. And thank you for listening to the Mill Creek View podcast. You got me up to number 55 in the country one time. Thank you. I can't believe it. Be sure to follow us over to Mill Creek View Tennessee podcast for season two starting next week, maybe even twice a week. So clear your calendars. Just search for it and you'll find it, buddy. And vote. I've done all I can on that front. Until next time in Tennessee, this is Steve Abramowitz, CEO of the Still Going, just without me reading it to you on here. So keep reading it and advertising in the Mill Creek and Snohomish View newspapers. Signing off, and always, always, peace, please, in our time.
To better understand why Steve chose to move to Tennessee is summed up in the following interview he did on the Dory Motson Show. May he rest in peace, not Steve, but Dory, who passed away during the COVID years. Steve got a chance to be on his show to share his story of how he decided to move to Tennessee, which started a new, well, let's just say a new chapter of Steve's life.
A wonderful organization that has been a source of happiness for a lot of families here in the Puget Sound area for decades and decades and decades. It's the Greater Seattle Summer Swim League, but it's been just ripped apart by turmoil in the last year or so because some extreme gender theory activists have infiltrated this children's organization. Like I said, an organization that's been around forever, and they have seemingly made transgender kids a particular focus of this organization, which means boys, biological boys, competing against girls, sharing locker rooms with girls. Steve Abramowitz was a parent in this program, and he joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Steve, it's good to talk to you this afternoon.
Hi, Dory. Thank you so much. I admire you very much.
Thank you. That's very nice of you to say. So tell me this journey. What has happened with the Seattle Summer Swim League over the last year or so?
Well, trying not to cry, my daughter, who is a girl biologically and
her own opinion. I knew that when you said use the word daughter. I'm one of those old-fashioned guys, Steve.
Oh, because you read, probably, or at least know the
dictionary. And because I have three daughters, too. But,
there you go. That, too. Okay. We know the difference.
All right, go ahead.
So like you, I'm a concerned parent who saw something that I just could not abide, and I saw a task force created by a board from a league that I had to do a little research to find out who these people were, because it's not just a monolith. These are actually people making these decisions. And they said, we are going to pass a bylaw in April that allows some pretty sketchy stuff. Number one would be the men's locker rooms have to open for the girls' locker rooms have to open for men, and I guess vice versa.
Right.
Then I saw that they were going to have these things called EOs, equity officers, unscreened, no background checks necessary, volunteers walking around the 16 clubs, asking kids out of earshot of the coaches and the parents, especially, sexual orientation questions. That's against what's called the safe sport laws, okay? But they were going to do it anyway because this person said we're going to do it. And then it was big uproar, I should say, and they kicked the October. It died down, went away, but this summer they had those clipboards, and those who knew about it said, don't you dare ask my kids any questions or I'll sue you. Ironically enough, those kids weren't asked, but others were. And now October's coming fast, and I tell you, because I only have a few seconds with you, this is the end of women's sports in Washington. Mark my words.
Absolutely. And nationwide, because the Biden administration has talked about this at the federal level being codified. And, you know, what I talk about all the time, Steve, you have a daughter who's an athlete. I coached high school girls sports for a long, long time. The fastest woman in the world a couple of years ago, her name was Allison Felix. There were 300 high school boys who ran faster than the fastest woman in the world. So yes, to suggest that we should just take biologically different people and mix them up in the sports world, it absolutely 100% is the end of women's sports, as you say.
But here's the kicker. This gentleman, I almost said his name, who is a she, her on LinkedIn, so that's his choice, her choice, says publicly, you can see it online, if a child thinks they're a other gender, they have to start the cycle of drugs at age 9. And that means that the doctors have to prescribe it and the parents have to go with it. And if they don't, they won't be at their full potential by age 14, which means they can no longer compete. They now must only do exhibitions. So their careers are over. So who does that hurt? Does that hurt the transgender boy? No. Does that hurt? Well, yes, but not in competition. Leah Thomas seems to be doing pretty well. He was ranked pretty low, and now he's number one.
Right.
Does it hurt the boys? No. They say, bring it on. I'll take on all comers because I'm already at the top. It hurts the girls. Their muscle mass is smaller. They're shorter. You name it. You have girls. You know.
Well, and, I mean, you look at Leah Thomas. Leah Thomas towers over the other girls that Leah Thomas is competing against. Leah Thomas has huge feet, which like Michael Phelps does, which can act as flippers against biologically smaller people in the competition. No, it makes no sense. So.
Well, you nailed it. How would you like to see, like Billie Jean King did in the 70s? How would you like to see Michael Phelps against Leah Thomas? Who do you think's going to win? So you automatically, and this is the kicker. I think I said that already. So another kicker. There's a 70-year, and you mentioned this of being long-term, 70-year scoreboard at one of the schools, one of the swim clubs. They want to take it down, the board does. And ironically enough, the husband and wife owner are kind of into this. They want to take down the records that people's grandkids and great-grandfathers, you know, or daughters, granddaughters, yes, achieve, and go do away with sex at all and just say swim by age. What does that do for the girls? It puts them at a disadvantage. It's not fair. And of course there's the drugs. Of course there's the locker room horrors. I'd hate to be the one who has to come home and hear about that. And then there's this, the fairness for women. I'm just a concerned dad. That's all I am. That's why we're having this chat.
Yeah, I mean, because they say that it's a matter of fairness for the transgender kids. First of all, 9-year-olds, to begin to biologically, medically change 9 and 10 and 11-year-olds is just an abomination. And any doctor who's a part of that, I believe, should be arrested for child mutilation. I really,
school
really believe that.
School counselors, nurses, doctors, yes, parents, grandparents. I mean, it is a demonic family tree, you know, and it's not good. We don't even know if these things cause cancer or brain damage or what they do. They're just saying you got to do it at age 9. And look at the statistics of people who said, I regret that. They suppress that in the news.
Let me ask you, I want to stay focused on the Greater Seattle Summer Swim League for a moment. I heard from one parent who told me about a team of 8 U-12 girls, and 5 of the 8 in this league identify as either non-binary or transgender. I've heard that those 5 are pressuring the other 3 to do the same thing. I'm hearing from parents in that league, Steve, who tell me that the kids who identify as non-binary and trans are cutting themselves, that there is a wave, a blanket of depression that is hanging over a league that has always been a source of joy and light in people's lives.
Oh, yes. I mean, that's the beauty of it. That's why it's lasted so long in Seattle when it's raining all the time, but the Summer Swim League has been a joy for divers and swimmers to get exercise, to get vitamin D in their skin, to get to know friends, to spend all summer long, late nights when the sun doesn't go down, out there by the pool with the barbecue and the family to come watch them swim. I mean, we did this for 15 years for my daughter. My son, you know, he's 2 years older, but same thing. And she was a champion, and she doesn't get to graduate on the podium in 2 years when she's a senior like they always do because she's done. But by the way, the 40-year champion coach left for Texas. The next assistant has also left, I think, Texas, maybe Tennessee like me. I don't know. But they've destroyed it. They took something good, which is something beautiful, and they made it awful, all for the minority. And by the way, the person that I'm not going to say his name, her name, there's seven kids at his swim team, just that. The statistics say one out of every 2,000 people may be gender dysphoria, or to say that. Right. Something's going on there.
Oh, yeah. No, statistically, it is impossible to have 5 out of 8 girls on a U-12 team. When you and I were kids, none of us, boys or girls, thought about gender identity before age 12. It has become a fad. If you want to be part of the in crowd, you have to say that you're something you're not. And there's tremendous peer pressure to do this.
The ones I feel the worst for are the ones who are going to say, you know, I'm a pretty good swimmer at age 8, 9. I've won a couple of red ribbons. I love that. I want to keep going. And they say, well, you know, you walk kind of like a boy. You may want to consider the hormone therapy if you want to compete forever because whatever. I mean, when I was a kid, I thought I was going to be a professional soccer player. Didn't want to be in the NFL. Reality set in, but certainly didn't shoot hormones into myself and ruin my entire reproductive system or potentially brain damage because I wanted to swim in a summer rec league.
I'm talking with Steve Abramowitz. He is a local dad, and he is moving his family. And I've heard that threat many, many times, but this one is for real. In fact, as we are talking, Steve, you are in an echoey place because you're in an empty house. Is this a single issue for you? Your family, you told me you got out of King County. How long ago did you get out of King County because of all the craziness?
Well, long story short, we moved from Bellevue to Seattle in 2007. Again, Bellevue was an amazing place to get married and have my first home and work and do everything we wanted to do outdoors and you name it. Then we moved to Seattle thinking, oh, Seattle's so great. It's got diversity. It's got culture. It's got food. It's got you name it. And then we started having kids. We have two, as I said. And we got involved in their schools. They happen to be in Catholic school. Then I got involved in the board of my religious organization. It happened to be a synagogue, largest out west of the Mississippi. And between the Catholic Church and that, and Seattle's mayor, and all the crazy infrastructure, and all the BLM, and all the rest, we said, we're getting out of King County. This place is nuts. Right. How do you defend cops, defund cops, in a world where I'm supportive of police? My newspaper is always talking about how great the police are. Big Fortney fans. So anyway, we left. And we moved to Snohomish County.
So you've discovered with this this issue, though, that you can't get out of the craziness if you stay in the Puget Sound area. So you're leaving the state?
Leaving the state today. As soon as we get off the phone, I head east. You spend the night in Spokane and then off to Nashville. I'll be back. I have business here. I own a newspaper in Snohomish County. Two of them, actually, Snohomish View and the Mill Creek View. Okay. And so I'll be here, but my daughter won't be, and that's the key. It's, we are leaving Washington because Inslee.
When Steve arrived in Tennessee, there was a little bit of an adjustment period taking place where we transitioned from Mill Creek View, Washington, to eventually the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast. There was a few episodes where we continued to do the Mill Creek View, Washington, but then it was decided it's time to change and shift gears. Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast with your host, Steve Abramowitz, Managing Director of Mill Creek Financial Partners.
Hello and good day to y'all and new listeners to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast. I have a great show for you, season 2, focused on the volunteer state and our nation today. with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community. This time, special guest Gary Humble. But first, for more information about the Mill Creek View podcast, visit us on Spotify or Deezer at Mill Creek View Podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to the show so you don't miss
shop ticket for this week's rent. Well, last week's check.
Welcome to the new Steve and Steve segment of our show. Producer Steve and I are going to talk about what we just heard and something I have on my mind, where we cover the latest happenings and issues of our day. So, pretty great interview, don't you think, Steve?
Oh, I really enjoyed it. This guy knows his stuff. And Steve, it's like two peas in a pod, you and Gary. I mean, I think having you there in Tennessee and having him, and he launched in January and you launched this year as well. I think I find that's very cool, don't you?
It is, because, you know, I know where they went off the rails in Washington, where you sit, and now I'm looking at it from the perspective here.
Steve didn't take long to start picking up well-known individuals, specifically office holders there in Tennessee, when he started his first episode with Gary Humble. That became a long list of individuals who started gracing his show, knowing that Steve was fair, balanced, and honest in his approach, and didn't really climb all over people's backs, but actually did a great job of asking good questions, sometimes hard questions, but nonetheless asking the right questions, which has earned him a reputation for, like I said in the beginning of this episode, 200 episodes. Here's an example.
Tennessee podcast, this time very special guest, Tennessee Senator Marsha Blackburn, for our People in the News episode. We are talking to Brentwood resident, mom of Chad and Mary Morgan, wife of Chuck Blackburn. She helped start a young Republicans club in my new county, Williamson County, Tennessee, and in 1989, she was selected to chair this county's Republican Party. Re-elected to the House seven times, in 2019 became the first woman to have been elected senator for Tennessee, the great Senator from our great state of Tennessee, Marsha Blackburn. Senator, how are you today?
I am doing great, and here in D.C., working hard. And, I hear it's a beautiful day in Tennessee. It would be a good one to be home, right?
You bet. It's blue skies and 70, and we miss
That's
you.
What I hear.
And I am so happy to have you on for the first of what I hope is many appearances, if you like. You and fellow Tennessee Senator Hagerty sponsored No WHO Pandemic Preparedness Treaty Without Senate Approval Act, NWPPTWSAA, and other senators on not allowing the WHO to come in and take over our healthcare system in a crisis. Hard to believe that's necessary to prevent giving up our sovereignty, but it totally is. Will it pass?
We are very encouraged about what we are hearing about this. We felt like it was necessary to be explicit in pointing out that we do not want the WHO to take our sovereignty away to make decisions for our citizens. When you look at what happened in the pandemic, it was the WHO that decided to go negotiate the language of the COVID report with the Chinese Communist Party. And then you had the Chinese Communist Party, after the language was approved, then they're sending funding to the WHO. We think it is important to find out exactly what happened.
Over the years, we've had a wonderful opportunity to bring on the show wonderful people making a positive impact in the world around them. The following are a few examples of some of the people we've had on the show.
Hi, this is Aaron Spradlin with the Mission America Foundation, and you're listening to Mill Creek View, Tennessee Podcast.
Hi, I'm Tennessee Attorney General Jonathan Scarmetti, and you're listening to the Mill Creek View Podcast.
Hello, I'm Alveda King, and you're listening to Mill Creek View Podcast.
You're listening to the Mill Creek View Podcast, and this is Alan Shacklock. I'm a record producer, an educator, and an orchestrator, and everything else I can get my hands on.
Hey, my name is Amy Souza. I am a women's rights activist and workshop leader, and you are listening to the Mill Creek View Podcast.
Hi, this is Billy Falcon, and you're listening to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast.
Yes, this is State Senator Brett Taylor, and I'm currently on Mill Creek View podcast, Tennessee. I'm glad to be here.
I'm Chris Carter from Porter Road, delivering life-changing meat, and we're here on the Mill Creek View podcast.
Hey there, it's Chris Stegall from the Chris Stegall Show. Not nearly as clever as the name Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast. I'll work on my name. Anyway, enjoy the show.
Hi, I'm Dinesh D'Souza, and you're listening to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast.
Hey, it's Dan Mandis from Super Talk 99.7 WTN, and I appreciate being here on the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast.
I'm Cole Walker. I'm a UT Martin rodeo athlete collegiately, and this is Mill Creek View podcast.
Hello, I'm Dr. Ming Wang, ophthalmologist from Nashville, Tennessee, and you're listening to Mill Creek View podcast.
This is Gabe Hart, columnist for the Tennessee Lookout, and you're listening to the Mill Creek View podcast.
Hey, everybody. My name is Eric Jacobson. I'm the CEO of the Battle of Franklin Trust, and you're listening to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast.
Hi, this is Senator Jack Johnson. You're listening to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast.
Hi, I'm Jackson Elliott with the Epoch Times, and I'm glad to be here today on the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast.
That's just a smattering of the guests. We've had nearly 200 episodes with 200 guests. The following are some notable interviews that Steve has done.
I have another great guest for you, focused on the volunteer state and our nation today, with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community. This time, special guest Steve Friend, FBI whistleblower, now suspended, FBI. Yes, another Steve show. You've had three of those. Crazy. But first, for more information about the Mill Creek View podcast, visit us on Amazon Music or Spotify at Mill Creek View Tennessee or Mill Creek View Washington podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to the show so you won't miss a single episode. And thank you for listening. Welcome to our People in the News episode, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today we are talking with Steve Friend. Here's what the great New York Post reporter and author of the book Laptop from Hell, Miranda Devine, said about Steve. Bombshell allegations by FBI Special Agent Steve Friend, contained in a whistleblower complaint filed late Wednesday with the Department of Justice Inspector General, revealed a politicized Washington, D.C. FBI field office cooking the books to exaggerate the threat of domestic terrorism and using an overzealous January 6 investigation to harass conservative Americans and violate their constitutional rights. Friend, 37, a respected 12-year veteran of the FBI and a SWAT team member, was suspended Monday, stripped of his gun and badge, and escorted out of the FBI field office in Daytona Beach, Florida, after complaining to his supervisors about the violations. He was declared absent without leave last month for refusing to participate in SWAT raids that he believed violated FBI policy and were a use of excessive force against January 6 suspects accused of misdemeanor offenses. This American hero, the father of two small children, has blown up his dream career because he could not live with his conscience if he continued to be part of what he sees as the unjust persecution of conservative Americans. He said, "I have an oath to uphold the Constitution," he told supervisors when he asserted his conscientious objection to joining an August 24th raid on a Jan 6 subject in the Jacksonville, Florida area. "I have a moral obligation and want to be considered a conscientious objector." Friend, who did not vote for Donald Trump in 2020's election, said he told his immediate boss twice that he believed the raid and the investigative process leading up to it violated FBI policy and the subject's right under the Sixth Amendment to a fair trial and Eighth Amendment right against cruel and unusual punishment. "There's no better person to tell us what is going on in the Justice Department and the FBI in the era of Trump and Biden than Special Agent Friend." Sir, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Steve. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for taking the time. We really appreciate it. So just to get things going, we've seen pro-life senior citizens, veterans, pastors, and of course, 800 or so January 6 trespassers and paraders, quote unquote. That's pretty much what they are jailed for, completely and unconstitutionally rounded up and put in solitary confinement. We also saw Edward Snowden flee to Russia, of all places, and Julian Assange is rotting away now in a UK prison, but the Uruguay embassy for years. The message that these public arrests send is that if you have something to say against the government, don't. How did you overcome that?
Well, I think in my time with the FBI, you know, was a little mistaken on her timeline for me. I've been with the FBI for 8 years. When I came in 2014, it was my dream job. And the reason for that is I believed in the mission and upholding and defending the Constitution was an oath to me that was worth taking, was worth putting my life on the line for. And frankly, as I expressed to my supervisors, you know, as all this has come about, I felt like I was actually doing my job by ringing the alarm bell on as to what's going on with January 6th.
All right. Well, there's a little bit of a Zoom issue there going on, so I apologize for that. But, you know, hello, and welcome to a very special edition of the Mill Creek View Tennessee podcast. We are focusing on the volunteer state and our nation today with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community. This time, very special guest, Kurt Cameron, exclusively for the whole show. Tune in tomorrow for the Return of Steve and Steve segment. For more information about the Mill Creek View podcast, visit us anywhere you get your podcasts and socials like Twitter and Truth at Mill Creek View Tennessee. Welcome to our People in the News episode, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today, we are talking with actor and author Kurt Cameron, who will be at the Nashville Public Library this Saturday, February 25th, on his book reading tour with As You Grow. Kurt Cameron was born in Panorama City, California. His parents named him after Captain Kirk, the William Shatner character from the original Star Trek series. A family friend in the business noted that both Kirk and his sister Candace were cute enough that they could easily pick up lucrative work in commercials. He found a more winning formula in 1985 with Growing Pains, playing the oldest son of a family headed by a psychiatrist, Alan Thicke, and a journalist, Joanne Kearns, characterized by with-it parents and mischievous but squeaky clean kids. On the show, Cameron played the incorrigible Mike Seaver, and his winning portrayal won over a large number of teen fans. Growing Pains ranked among Nielsen's top 20 network shows for its first four seasons, raising to number five in 1987-88 year. On the heels of his sitcom success, Cameron appeared in his first feature film in 1986, the Robin Williams, Kurt Russell, Glory Days comedy, The Best of Times. Cameron and his trademark smirk would grace covers of a raft of teen magazines. He played the son, father of Dudley Moore in Like Father, Like Son, 1987, firmly establishing as the resident star of Growing Pains, with fans sending him some 10,000 letters a week. In his autobiography, Still Growing, the family of his first girlfriend initially exposed the 17-year-old to evangelical Christianity. Cameron experienced what he would later describe as a life-changing encounter with Jesus and declared himself born again. He and wife Chelsea Noble are among the founders of Camp Firefly and the Firefly Foundation, which sponsors camping trips for terminally ill children and their families. They have six children, four of whom were adopted, Jack, Isabel, Anna, and Luke, and two biological kids, Olivia Rose and James Thomas Cameron. Mr. Cameron, how are you today, sir?
Steve, could you repeat all of that?
Not in one breath, no. I hope I did you justice.
My goodness. My whole life just flashed before my eyes as you were reading these things. I'm like, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, so well,
thanks,
10 of it grew up.
In, up to speed.
10 of those years grew up before our eyes as well. And I have to say it, I was born in 1971. So there I was in 1985 watching Growing Pains at 14, like most of my friends, yeah. Pretty much up to 20. Yeah. Up to 1992, very formative years, and now I'm talking to you, so that's very exciting for me.
Yeah, man, great to meet you. Great to meet you. Thanks for all the great work that you do. I love the flag that you have hanging behind you.
You remind me very much.
Gibson in The Patriot.
Well, we are lovers of truth here, and American patriotism is what we're all about. So, you know, being Mike Seaver, did you feel a responsibility to the teenage boys out there watching you to be a role model?
I don't think in the very beginning I did.
Welcome to our People in News episode, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today, we are talking with actor, producer, author, and director Kevin Sorbo, famous for his role on the number one worldwide hit TV series Hercules, The Legendary Journeys. Kevin always strived to bring hopeful messages and meaningful entertainment to all. After Hollywood's wokeness spread wide, Kevin forged his own path,
Already a successful actor, director, and producer, he founded Sorbo Studios to breathe traditional values and uplifting content back into the fabric of American culture. As an author, producer, and mentor, Kevin is dedicated to creating stories that inspire and nurture the soul. He wrote The Test of Lionhood, a Christian children's book that teaches kids about masculinity. So check that out for your favorite kids' Christmas stockings. There's only 20 days left, people. Kevin Sorbo is happily married to his bride of over 25 years, Sam Sorbo, and they have three nearly grown children, I think they are grown now, who they homeschooled, Braden, Octavia, and Shane, born 12 pounds, 6 ounces. Wow, born nearly full grown. Turns 20 in a few months. Hello, Mr. Sorbo. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. You're in Florida, right? Where it's always sunshine.
It's beautiful here. Yeah, we escaped the worst governor in the country for the best governor in the country. So we love being here. We left 5 years ago, and both my wife and I have had family out here for a long time. I think our sisters lived out here 40 years. So we've been coming for years, and it just got to a point. I got so fed up with California, with what they've done to the state. As you know, that whole left coast is insane. And we left, and it's been a great move for me. I mean, I've shot over 80 movies, and probably 90% of those movies are shot in Texas or further east. Nothing shoots in California anymore. So we decided 5 years ago, enough is enough, and we got out of there. I miss it. I'll be honest. I loved where I lived. I lived between L.A. and Santa Barbara, so I was like a good hour and a half either side. But it just got to a point, the traffic, the taxes, everything. I said, I'm done.
Yeah. Well, you're where it's always sunshine, just like California. It's turned
cold.
Yeah, we're
cold. We only have 81 degrees today. It's very chilly.
Yeah, but thankfully they're not going to take your gas stoves away at the like the TVA yet. So not a fear where you're at. Is that the Hercules sword behind you?
That was after 7 years, the very, very, very last day of filming. After that big chapter in my life, this is the sword that the props department built for me and put to me, and it's got the dates on there from 1993 to 1999, the 7 years we filmed it down there. And it says, you know, the journey may be over, but the legend lives on. So
awesome. Awesome. Looks like a Lord of the Rings.
My whole crew, actually about 90% of my crew went on to work on Lord of the Rings. Peter Jackson used to come on the set every once to see how the crew was developing. Cause I lived in New Zealand for all that time. And they all went into one Academy Awards. I mean, our props department, our wardrobe department, our the Weta group that did all of our creatures. I think they won like 5 Academy Awards over the three different Lord of the Rings.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, welcome back to the Mill Creek View Tennessee podcast, and happy Halloween or All Saints Day or All Hallows Tide, if you prefer. We are back always with an interesting person making a positive change in our community. This time, very, very special guest, John Schneider. But first, to subscribe to the Mill Creek View podcast, visit us anywhere you get your podcast at Mill Creek View Tennessee. While you're there, please subscribe. It's totally free to you. Welcome to our People in the News episode, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today, we are talking with John Schneider, a.k.a. Jonathan Kent, a.k.a. Bo Duke. John has enjoyed a successful career in country music, topping charts with his number one hits, I've Been Around Enough to Know, and You're the Last Thing I Needed Tonight. From 1984 to 1987, Schneider released 6 albums, including his number one album, A Memory Like You, and a greatest hits album. Schneider then took time off to pursue his acting opportunities, but would return with Worth the Wait in 1996. He's gone on to release 2 Christmas albums, including Home for Christmas with Dukes of Hazzard co-star Tom Wopat. Check those out. Christmas is almost here. It would be impressive enough for an actor to star in a single show that changed the course of television history with iconic characters, but the fact that John Schneider's done that for at least 4 decades makes him nothing short of legendary. Whether it's playing Jim Cryer on Tyler Perry's The Haves and the Have-Nots, immortalizing Superman's daddy, Jonathan Kent on Smallville, and Bo Duke on The Dukes of Hazzard, his is one of the most recognized faces in all of TV. And there he is. According to some commentary of Smallville in 2001, John was approached by some kids who said, "Hey, you're Jonathan Kent." It was the first time that he was recognized as someone else other than Bo Duke. He's also been seen in movies from Smokey and the Bandit, Burt Reynolds, 1977, to Joe in Christmas in Tune, co-starring Reba McEntire, 2021, to regularly popping up on Dr. Quinn, Medicine Women, Nip Tuck, The Secret Life of the American Teenager, and even Dancing with the Stars. John Richard Schneider IV was born April 8, 1960 in Mount Kisco, New York, to Shirley and John Richard Jack Schneider III, a pilot and U.S. Air Force veteran. John began acting at the age of 8. He and his mother moved to Atlanta, Georgia when he was 14. He won the role of Beau Duke on The Dukes of Hazzard 1979 on CBS by pretending he was a genuine country boy from Snellville, Georgia, not Smallville. He had a week's growth of beard and held a beer can, claiming he was in his mid-20s as the role called for. Show ran from 1979 to 1985 when young Schneidy was 18 years old through 25. I was 8 to 14 and never missed a Friday. Four kids, Leah Michelle Castle, Project Runway, All-Stars, Camera Woman, Chasen Joseph, actor, Secret Life of American Teenager, and Karish Schneider, active duty firefighter, and played Danielle in Collier & Company and Mandy. And now he's on the Mill Creek View podcast with me. John, how are you today?
My God, that was wonderful. I have to mention one more beautiful child from my lovely wife, Alicia, and I. Her daughter, my daughter now, is Jessica Turner, who's going to give me a grandson.
Oh boy.
In March. Yeah.
A new role.
March. Karis gave us a granddaughter, so we're going to have a grandson in March, and it's just wonderful. My God, you've done your research. Thank you.
40 years on the screen and you know, looking up to you as an 8-year-old, the coolest guy I knew on TV was not, you know, I had to do a lot of homework and I had a lot of editing. Believe me, there was a lot more there. So I'm great. And I'm trying not to be a fan, you know, fanboy and freak
that's
out.
That's okay. Like, you know, it's great. It's greatly appreciated. You know, when there's some video on YouTube somewhere where somebody came up, I was at a Comic-Con, right? And, They were journalism. They're the journalism class, and they wanted to interview me. And I said, "Oh, great!" And they came up and said, "Okay, who are you, and what do you do?" And I said, "Look, pal," I said, "first of all, if you're in journalism school, really, then do your research. Figure out who it is you're talking to, because you never want to say something like that to someone like me, or really anybody." So anyway, it was like people were saying, "Oh my gosh, you were mean." So there was this video about John Schneider, Jonathan Kent, being kind of abrupt with this guy. 10 years later, I'm doing a news show in I don't remember where I was, but the person that was interviewing me on the news show said, "Look, I want to tell you, I'm the guy that you read the riot act to, and had you not done that to me, I never would be where I am today."
Look at you giving advice, fatherly advice.
In addition to our normal guests, Steve and I decided it would be great to have a couple special features featuring individuals that we enjoy having on the show on a regular basis. The following are a couple of those shows. I think most people really enjoy these. Well, we'll let you hear who they are.
Welcome back to the Mill Creek View Tennessee podcast, where we interview always an interesting person making a positive change in our community and our world today. Today we are with Brandon Lewis at Casa de Lewis. Brandon was kind enough to let us host the show at his house today. This is his den. So hello and how are you? Happy birthday.
I'm glad to be here. Another year older beats the alternative.
It does. I want to be having birthdays on this side, not the other side. Gotcha. All right. Well, you've had about 15 friends from all ages, all walks of your life coming in and out of here this weekend so far, and that's fantastic. That means you're a very popular, well-liked guy, so you must be doing something right, or they're insane.
They're probably a combination, too. I do feed them.
Okay.
I do feed them, and so they, you know, like stray cats, they will, if you feed them, they'll just keep coming.
Always offer them a nice meal, and they'll be here. So you moved here about a year and a half ago now.
Year and a half, finally complete, settling in. We're in the library here, my wife's domain.
Okay.
So she wanted a library when we constructed the home, and here it is.
And she was kind enough to take the girls and herself out of here so that she didn't have to listen to all of us snoring and making fools of ourselves.
Yes, telling terrible stories and, you know, stumbling around and losing at darts. It's really shameful.
And this is historical Signal Mountain, so it became famous, obviously, in the Civil War. They probably used this and lookout right over there to spy on the troops as they were passing by.
Yes. and rain terror down on the city of Chattanooga from 9-pound and 12-pound cannons.
Are they still around here, some of the cannons?
There are not many on signal, but there are a whole bunch on lookout. They pretty much came, they came from that side. I think there was some very small action on signal, but there's primarily lookout.
Okay. Well, I can tell you firsthand that the stars last night were just stunning. They were everywhere.
Calm.
These laws.
What'll I do with my life, Murphy?
That's right. Let's Go Brandon and Murphy's Law have debuted in the last several months and have been very popular. Speaking of popular, Steve has quite frankly become quite popular on his own right, being invited to several shows, podcasts, and TV shows.
Fault Lines.
Welcome back to Fault Lines on Radio Sputnik. My name is Jamal Thomas. I'm joined with Malik Abdul, coming to you live out of our station in Washington, D.C. If you all just so happen to find yourself in the D.C. area, you can catch us on radio at 105.5 FM at 1390 AM. We're also kicking around in Kansas City at 102.9 FM and 104.7 FM. If you guys are digging what Malik and I are putting down, whatever platform you're consuming this content on, give us a like, share that audio, a video. If you want to join in on the conversation, you can do so with the chat, tweet, and of course, you can reach us by phone at 202-521-1320. Your engagement helps make this show what it is. Don't be shy. We're trying to get to you as time permits. We're going to be full today, though. We have a full cast of guests. But as we were pointing out, I'm flustered by this a little bit because it takes a certain level of cojones to do something like this. But Hunter Biden is asking a federal judge for permission to subpoena former President Donald Trump, former Attorney General Bill Barr, and other justices or Justice Department officials in his criminal gun case. He is trying to say that they had something to do with the case being brought on and that they were basically out to get him. And this was the way that they got him. Now, again, this is really ironic considering Donald Trump has been saying the exact same thing. But whatever, this is Hunter Biden. He is out there pushing this narrative. To have a conversation with us, we're joined with Steve Abramovitz. He is owner and CEO of Mill Creek View and host of Mill Creek View podcast. Steve, welcome to the show, man. How you doing this morning?
Hey, guys. It's a bit early for the M&M imagery this close to Halloween.
Is it? I mean, there's all sorts of images. Him standing there with his erect penis and a gun in his hand.
Yeah, we don't want those images.
But he's acting like somebody besmirched his character as opposed to his own laptop. Besmirching.
If all else fails and you know you're going to jail because even the totally corrupt DOJ and FBI can't help you, blame Trump.
That's astonishing to me. When I read this, I was like, how did they have anything? I mean, for God's sake, the IRS agents, Shapley and Ziegler, come out and be like, look, they weren't going to have a case. New York Times even pointed out that Weiss wasn't going to prosecute this case. And it was only when Ziegler and Shapley came out that Weiss got a fire under him because I guess he was being embarrassed at that point. You have other situations where they were like, they wouldn't even let, meaning agents saying, they wouldn't even let us walk by the house, let alone break into the house in the way that they did Trump with Mar-a-Lago. Meaning he got every last pass that a person could get. And he is now saying that he was politically prosecuted. Just astonishing to me. Give me your take on this.
He faces up to 25 years in prison if convicted on all the charges. He faces one count of making a false statement in the purchase of a firearm. You and I would go to jail for that. Another of making a false statement related to information required to be kept by a federal firearms licensed dealer. And one other count of possession of a firearm by a person who is an unlawful user of or addicted to controlled substances. You were talking about him voluntarily putting things on Pornhub. So he's obviously shameless, but none of that has anything to do with Trump. But they want to subpoena him. Just more election interference, in my opinion, you know, pile it on. Pretty sick using Hunter drug trial to hit Trump, but that's the story of Hunter's life. They used him as a crack addicted, porn addicted, sex addicted human to do these deals with foreign governments and all this other stuff, you know, in a haze of crack and whatever. So, I wouldn't.
Well, we have a guest to help us talk about this, Steve Abramowitz. He's the owner and CEO of the Mill Creek View and the host of the Mill Creek View podcast. Steve, thanks for joining us here on the Final Countdown. I've got a question for you and about this rural tour on the Bidenapalooza, the barnstorming tour. It's so funny that he's, of course, using this very old-timey kind of expression because he likes to say things like malarkey that nobody else ever says outside of the nursing home. And even then, that's like the old part of the nursing home. I'm just wondering, you know, what about abortion? It seems like abortion is the secret sauce for Democrats next year. If they're going to prevail, it's their number one issue. Bidenomics isn't going anywhere, whether that's fair or not. But, you know, we have abortion on the ballot in Ohio, a state that used to be swingy, but now is considered a red state. It's definitely going to be codified and end up in the state constitution as of next Tuesday night. Kentucky, Kansas, places like that. Where abortion has outperformed expectations in what are supposedly red states. Is that part of the mix for Biden?
Oh, yeah. First of all, hello. Thanks for having me back on. He is taking time away from the beach now that winter is here. And if you look at the calendar, you know, it's cold, right, over there in Delaware. But it's exactly 1 year to the day from election 2024, and he's been to Hawaii, who got $700 each after the fires, and Israel, he's been there getting billions, and Ukraine near a quarter trillion of our money, but not East Palestine, Ohio to this day. So it's nice he found time to go to Minnesota before it gets too cold because they're pissed. They have to basically go do an apology tour, so to speak, not like Obama did to apologize for past sins, but for the neglect of the Midwest and the industrial base of this country for the last 3 years to say, like, oh, don't forget, I'm still here. And so, you know, I have this thing. CNN.com has the fear and greed speedometer, right, for the stock market. I have a pissed off a meter for politics, and it's been pretty good at predicting. You look at the demographics like you do TV ratings and see if many or most are mad. Biden has made everyone in the Democratic demographics, even the late night comedy hosts, mad. And so I think what he's basically trying to do, or at least his handlers are to do, is go out there and see if he can do a little song and dance to remind everybody he's still their guy.
Steve Abramowitz, who's joining us. Steve, I don't have your bio up. I just have that you're the CEO of Heartland Journal. That's all I got for you. Is that all I can say, Steve?
Well, it used to be the Mill Creek View podcast,
yeah.
But now it's the Heartland Journal Tennessee podcast, and I'm the editor-in-chief of the heartlandjournal.com website that launches today, so I'm proud to announce it on your show.
Excellent. Well, thank you. We're going to put that into the bio. We're going to make sure that we get that in there before we wrap this segment. But I want to ask you, what is going on with RFK Jr.? It seems like both.
I like Janice Bowling a lot, and I will be checking it out. I've got a little drive to take after the show today, and I might just pop on the old Heartland Journal on the podcast and let Abramowitz take me on my way. How about that?
Love it. Love it. Love it more than anything.
You have memories of, you mentioned to me via text, you have.
You know, and as with any show, sometimes you have what I call the heartbreak shows. The ones that Steve and I, quite frankly, are wiping our eyes after we've done the interview. The following is one of those heartrending interviews that we did with Chloe Cole.
Welcome to our People in the News episode, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today we are talking with Chloe Cole. Chloe is a young activist who opposes gender-affirming care for minors and supports bans on such care following her own detransition. She began transitioning at 12 and detransitioned at 17 after having undergone treatment, which includes puberty blockers, testosterone, and a double mastectomy. In May 2022, Cole testified in support of Ohio House Bill 454, which would ban gender-affirming care for minors. Cole testified in favor of an eventually passed Florida bill that denied Medicaid coverage for procedures that alter primary or secondary sexual characteristics for both adults and children. Cole testified against a bill introduced by Senator Scott Wiener to make California a sanctuary state for children seeking gender-affirming care. She filed a 90-day notice of intent to sue against the healthcare company Kaiser Permanente, along with the individual endocrinologist, psychiatrist, and plastic surgeon involved in her treatment. Chloe, I'm so excited to have you on the show. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. You're back in Tennessee, best place on earth. What's going on for you here this week?
Not much. I have quite a few friends over here, and I just wanted to visit them for the time being before I move on to the next trip.
I bet they're great people. All right. Well, you might not know this, but I've had some people on here pretty recently, actually, almost like a theme. They are very interested in you and your story. Joey Bright, Amy Souza, Tiffany Justice of Moms for Liberty, and Riley Gaines all want to hear this show when I'm done. So I hope I do a good job. Do you know those women's rights names?
Oh, yeah. They're pretty cool people.
That's great. Okay. Well, hopefully I do them justice and you justice. I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist or anything, just a guy that has a lot of questions. So I don't want to make you feel like I'm prosecuting you. Just wanting to get to know you and understand what you went through to get here. Okay.
Yeah, I understand.
Great. You did a very emotional interview with Jordan Peterson. He is all of that, a psychiatrist. People can watch that. You cried, he cried, I cried watching it. Joey told me about it. So I don't want to make you cry. I just want people to understand you. Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay. So my goal is to hear how you made your decisions. You know, it's called informed consent in the medical field, and what you heard that made up your mind and then changed your mind afterwards by the end. Can we start in the beginning of your journey and talk about your life before you ever even heard of or thought of transition?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. What was your childhood like as a baby to toddler? You know, what was your upbringing?
When I was a baby, I guess I was kind of colicky. Like I would cry a lot. Like I was really hard to console, and I was kind of, throughout a lot of my childhood, I was kind of difficult to bring up for that reason. Like I had a lot of issues with emotional dysregulation, and I feel like I kind of even might have had some attachment issues growing up. Hmm. Not because my parents were like abusive or neglectful or anything. I don't know if it's just like something that happened or something that happened at birth. I mean, when I was born, and I don't think this happened within the Kaiser Hospital, but I almost died. Because the nurse, when my mom was in labor, she was given too much of the medication to treat her pain as she was birthing me. And the nurses weren't really monitoring her. Wow. And so when I came out, I was almost dead. I was blue. I wasn't breathing. My dad was crying. My mom and dad didn't think that I would even make it. But they managed to resuscitate me, and I made it. Mm. But as a baby, when I was a toddler, my parents started noticing that I had a pretty artistic side. Like I would just fill a bunch of notebooks and printer papers and scrap paper with a bunch of scribbles and artwork of like cartoons that I watched, especially like,
not only did we offer emotional, heartfelt shows, but sometimes we got in deep into the weeds. Here's a voice from the past that, quite frankly, launched Steve locally and put him on the map.
Welcome to our People in the News episode, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today we are talking with Gabrielle Hansen, Alderman-at-Large, Franklin, Tennessee. Gabrielle Hansen moved to Franklin in 2012. She is the principal broker and owner of William... In D.C., I know it doesn't relate to Little Franklin as much, but there is what we call the deep state. There's a lot of administrators who think that their number one job in life is to make everybody's life miserable, and they weren't elected. Let's just put it that way. Here, we do have a woke ideology that is brought down upon our police and our city employees to influence them. You've been there watching this. What do you want to say about that, if anything?
I want to say that it's not just my perception that we are running in a more progressive and woke environment within our staff. When you look at our city website, it says that Franklin is a progressive community. No, we're really not. We're a traditional community. We are advancing, but we are not progressive. The employee survey of over 700 employees who responded had open-ended ability to add words to their questionnaire. Number one was teamwork, which is awesome, but number two was progressive, followed by woke, dishonest, liberal, egotistical, and other not so great words. So that tells me that from the inside, we've got a lot of really great staff members who are identifying a veering off from traditional values and they're concerned. So they're calling that to our attention.
Mm-hmm. And teamwork is a synonym for comrade sometimes,
yes,
right?
So it's even that. We're seeing it flow.
I remember that show even like it was yesterday. We heard some information that quite frankly it was the bomb. We launched the show. Within 24 hours, we got notice that the individual had been given death threats. So Steve had me pull it. I think it was in hours of time. I immediately pulled the show. We re-edited it. Then we had re-edited it again, or I should say I had to re-edit it a couple of times, and then we launched it. Man, did we ever know what that would lead to? It was after nearly 190-plus shows that Steve decided that he wanted to let go of the Mill Creek View paper and launch the Heartland Journal. It was decided that we would have a new show with a similar format, quite frankly, but just some new bumpers and so forth. Here's the launch of the newest show. Welcome to the Heartland Journal's Tennessee Podcast with your host, Steve Abramowitz, Editor-in-Chief of HeartlandJournal.com.
Howdy, I'm Steve Abramowitz, and this is the brand spanking shiny and new Heartland Journal's Tennessee Podcast. I am your host and Editor-in-Chief of the HeartlandJournal.com and daily e-newsletter. Please check it out and subscribe so if they ever deplatform me again, I can continue to communicate with you. It's still free. As before, we are focusing on the volunteer state and our nation today with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community. We've got the remnants also of the allergy voice in Tennessee. Sorry about that. But welcome to our Heartland People in the News segment, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today, we are talking with a guest, Austin Davis. As the BaptistNews.com website put it, Nashville is a city infused by religion, music, and history. So when a tragedy like the school shooting at the Covenant School, March 25th, 2022, happens, connections ripple across well-known names and places, and in this case, also across some unknown history that makes things complicated to comprehend. The Covenant School is affiliated with Covenant Presbyterian Church, a Presbyterian church in America congregation situated in the Tony South Side of Nashville, just down the road from Bluebird Cafe, one of the city's best-known live music venues. The Covenant School is a small private Christian school enrolling about 200 students in preschool through sixth grade. Tuition is about $16,000 a year, more expensive than a year of college at the University of Tennessee. The school was founded in 2001. Covenant Church, one of the leading PCA churches in the South, and its denomination represent the more conservative side of Presbyterian life in America today. The PCA was formed in the 1970s as a breakaway group from the better-known Presbyterian Church USA, mainly over the ordination of women, which the PCA opposes. Austin Davis grew up in Natchez, Mississippi, where his grandfather worked as a dairy farmer. My grandfather was the closest example to Jesus I will ever see on this planet, Austin says. A former Covenant Presbyterian deacon and church member and a former Covenant school father and what he never thought he'd be, a child sex abuse whistleblower. Austin and his family resigned from the church in 2006 after receiving unsatisfactory answers about the safety and welfare of vulnerable children. And brave enough to come on the HLJ to make sense of all this. Austin, are you there? How are you handling this electric storm and tornado watch today?
I'm here, and I really appreciate you, Steve, having me on your show. And you'll be this will be the first podcast I've been on kind of that's locally in Tennessee. So anyway, thank you very much.
But of course, not all things are serious. sometimes we have a little bit of fun behind the microphone.
View Tennessee podcast.
Okay, go ahead.
Hey, y'all. I'm Rodney Atkins.
And I'm Rose Falcon.
And this is the Mill Creek View Tennessee. Sorry.
Go ahead.
You got the troopers.
I'm out.
I'll say it.
Hey, y'all. I'm Rodney Atkins.
And I'm Rose Falcon. And you're listening to the Mill Creek View Tennessee podcast.
Nice.
Here we go. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Billy Falcon, and you're listening to the Mill Creek podcast.
Mill Creek View Tennessee podcast.
What?
Mill Creek View Tennessee podcast. It's okay. It's all the audio.
This is Billy Falcon, and you're listening to the Mill Creek Tennessee View podcast?
Yeah, View.
Almost. It's Mill Creek View Tennessee podcast. Yeah, Mill Creek View is the name, and then Tennessee is the state. So Mill Creek View Tennessee podcast.
You'll get it.
Hi, it's Daniel Turner, the founder and executive director of Power the Future, an American energy advocacy group, and I am on the Heartland.com podcast.
Heartland Journal.
Sorry.
Okay, darn. Do it again. Go ahead. Thanks, John.
That was so much fun. No, thank you.
That was fun. I love you have Braveheart up on your wall. What a great
movie. Well, speaking of,
I'm going to start calling you guys Steve and Quiet Steve.
Yeah, the Silent Steve.
Silent Steve, that's better.
But seriously, Steve has done a phenomenal job. 200 episodes. Woohoo! I can't believe it. And neither can a few other people.
Hey, Steve, this is Joey Bright, and I can't believe that you're going to be reaching your 200th episode. Congratulations. I hope that you make another 200 at least. Thank you so much for all that you do, and looking forward.
This is Steve Friend, FBI whistleblower and host of the American Radicals podcast on Rumble. Just calling to congratulate you, Steve, on reaching 200 episodes. Hopefully you can do another 200 or 2,000 more. I'm grateful to have the opportunity to call you my friend, and I wanted to thank you for covering the right things at the right time in the right way. Good job, man.
Well, spectacular congratulations are in order, Mr. Steve Abramowitz, 200 shows. Steve, this is John Jubilee, Energized Health, and brother, I rejoice with you. I celebrate you. Very few people ever get to that level. Congratulations for all of your success. We love you. We celebrate you. You are a rock star.
Hello, I'm Anna Kane.
And I'm Nicole Orozco.
And we want to do a huge shout out to Steve for reaching 200 episodes.
Woo-hoo!
What a huge accomplishment.
Yeah, very good.
From everyone at the Tennessee Conservative News, congratulations on your 200th anniversary. Damn it, I messed that up. You have to clip that part out. Here we go. I'm going to try it again. From everyone at the Tennessee Conservative News, congratulations to Steve Abramowitz on his 200th podcast, Fighting the Conservative Fight on the Thin Red Line in Tennessee. Hope that works, Steve. Sorry you have to edit it. See you, buddy.
Steve, it's been a pleasure working with you. And folks, it's been a pleasure of having you come alongside us and support this show. Without you, this show would be nothing. Thanks for those who have been with us from day one and those who've joined us in the last few episodes. We look forward to bringing you many more wonderful guests making a positive impact in the world.
Bring you back on the show just to talk about that. I really would love that. I would love a history lesson from both of you. All right, Steve, we're going to let you go right there only because we're out of time. That was the voice of Steve Abramowitz. He is the CEO of Heartland Journal. Steve also hosts the Heartland Journal's Tennessee podcast. Did I get everything there? You're also launching something today. Was that it?
That was it. .com.
All right. Good. I got it all in. All right. Thanks so much, Steve. Yeah, I've been dreaming of the
Any views or opinions represented on the podcast are personal and belong solely to the creator and do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the creator may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated.
I'm going to start calling you guys Steve and Quiet Steve.
Yeah, the Silent Steve.
Silent Steve, that's better.